And right now, thousands of first-year college students are moving onto campus and beginning freshman orientation. Many of them are bringing along their parents. As former dean of freshmen at Stanford University, Julie Lithcott-Hames observed this momentous mass migration year after year. And with each passing year, she also observed increasingly bad behavior from parents. Lithcott-Hames is author of the new book, How to Raise an Adult. She joins us from Stanford. Welcome.
Magna, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So first of all, let's start with what you saw happening to students at Stanford. What kind of things were going on with them that began to alarm you?
Well, I guess what I first saw and my colleagues saw, and let me pause and say this was not only seen at Stanford, but as we learned from dialogue with colleagues at campuses all over the nation in every tier, in the late 90s, parents were starting to not only bring their freshmen to campus, but stay, literally sometimes, but more often virtually, wanting to be involved in their sons and daughters' day-to-day transactions as a university student. And with the rise of parents, we saw the decline in the number of college students who seem to have the wherewithal to be and do and think and resolve and decide for themselves.
I'm not exactly clear what you mean. They were coming and doing what? Or they were staying involved in what way?
Well, they would want to, register for classes, or there might be an overseas studies opportunity, and the parents were expecting there would be an orientation for them. There's a disappointing grade, and the parents want to be the ones to talk to the faculty member. In every case, doing for their 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old what prior generations of 18 to 21-year-olds used to be able to do for themselves.
Uh-huh. And what effect did this have on the students themselves, or that you noticed?
My hunch was this is going to be harmful for these quote-unquote kids. You know, but I'm a lawyer, not a psychologist, so it wasn't for me to say that that was actually true. But, you know, there now in the last 3 or 4 years been studies from the field of psychology linking much higher rates of anxiety and depression to kids who were overparented.
So that's, you in fact devote an entire chapter of the book to the psychological harms or impacts of this kind of parenting.
Absolutely. I mean, there's this fundamental foundational concept in the field of psychology called self-efficacy, which is this sense that one's own actions and behaviors lead to consequences and outcomes. And if a parent, even with the best of intentions, which you and I know as moms, all parents have, even with the best of intentions, if we're over-helping, over-protecting, over-directing, concierging their every moment, we actually deprive them of the opportunity to develop self-efficacy, which is, in effect, depriving them of the chance to be, B-E, italics, to be a human.
Well, there's a lot of forces at play. I mean, I hear what you're saying about students being less capable in certain fundamental ways when they arrive on campus at the age of 18 and then 19, even 20. But on the other hand, I mean, since you brought up psychology, there seems to be a growing body of research that shows, you know, that the teenage and late teenage brain is still not, you know, fully developed. That's making its way into our legal system. And it's helping us inform what a lot of people are seeing as an expanded adolescence. I mean, that can't all be bad, our understanding of what we really should be expecting from people in their late teens.
Well, boy, I have a lot of thoughts on this subject. You know, number one, if a kid is poor or working class and the U.S. military is their best opportunity after high school, we consider them adults when we sign them up and ask them to go fight and die for our freedoms and for what we believe in. So if we're gonna say that people aren't actually adult until 18 and that they're really just emerging adults, let's make sure we apply that equally across the board. I think this concept of emerging adulthood is actually a labeling of the effects of affluent kids whose parents have had the disposable time and money to focus on their every moment. You know, I think it's the side effect of having been overparented. Yes, I agree that apparently one's prefrontal cortex doesn't fully develop until 24. What I'm saying is we know that now. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago we could ask a 21-year-old, you know, to make decent decisions on their own behalf, or an 18-year-old.
Well, Stanford has a diverse student body. I mean, were you seeing differences, if you could tell, between the students who came from your prototypical upper middle class affluent communities versus those who did not?
Yeah. This was sort of, a big irony that I wasn't at all expecting. When I became dean in 2002, I thought the students who would most need, you know, a helpful, caring, interested dean would be those from underprivileged backgrounds. You know, 15% of our undergraduates at the time were first in their family to go to college. I expected to need to be there for them. So then imagine how surprised I was that it was among my most affluent students that I saw this inability to have the wherewithal to be an adult. It was terribly surprising. You know, it cut across every ethnicity, this overparenting phenomenon. But poor and working class kids came to the college equipped with a set of skills born of, you know, maybe a harder life experience that enabled them to, you know, interact with the difficulties that, you know, college would throw their way with a little bit more grit and resilience, often in many cases, than their more affluent peers. So this is how affluence can actually end up undercutting a kid's chances to survive and thrive out in the world.
But can you really blame parents for being very concerned about their kids' safety, about wanting to help them as much as possible? I mean, I know, I raise my hand, and I know many, many parents who wish they could let their kid ride their bike to school, but it just seems really dangerous. And it's, you know, little things like that on a day-to-day basis that may build up over time. But any one decision makes sense when the parent's making it.
First of all, I'm a parent, too, as I've alluded to. I've got a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old, so I get it. And I know we parents love our kids fiercely, and we've just lost sight of the fact that our job as parents is to put ourselves out of a job. So if we've helped at every step along the way, they emerge to chronological adulthood, having been manufactured toward a set of outcomes that wouldn't have accrued without us. So what we have to do as parents is accept the short-term hurts and harms and bumps that come from childhood. Childhood used to naturally provide these learning opportunities. You know, failure is supposed to happen. Overparenting began in the early 1980s when we had a confluence of things all faced by the baby boom. Number one, the fear of stranger danger was born. A few very high publicized awful cases of child abduction and murder led to a nation's sense that there was something terrible likely to happen at every turn. The self-esteem movement was born at the same time, the early 80s. We should praise our kids for every little thing. The playdate was born. In 1984, we have to schedule play and hover over play and intervene when they're not getting along and tell them what to play with. And then A Nation at Risk was published at the same time saying kids need to be tested more and taught to the test. So all of a sudden, childhood was encroached upon by parents, both indoors and outdoors, homework and play, parks and streets. No wonder, you know, those same kids overparented in the early 1980s became the first generation of college students who came to college with their parents.
Mm. Well, your big critique here is not just the impact that helicopter parenting has on the young people themselves, but actually the impact on society. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, yeah. If you think about it, you know, the first set of kids to be overparented are millennials. And millennials are now the largest generation in U.S. history. And so the practical reality is millennials will be ruling the nation one day. And we in Gen X need to know that when it's our turn to hand over the mantle of leadership to the folks behind us, that they've got what it takes, not only, you know, to thrive in their own homes, in their own relationships, their own workplace, but to really lead our institutions, our government, our nonprofits. This matters at the level of society and country.
Hmm. Well, we're speaking with Julie Lithcott-Hames. Her new book is How to Raise an Adult. And one of the things that I really loved about the book was that you had a list, basically, of things that an 18-year-old in 2015 should be able to do. And on that list, talk to strangers, manage their own workload, earn and manage money, handle interpersonal problems. I mean, are those basic level things the kind of things that you're really seeing people just incapable of doing?
Absolutely. It seems basic, but it has become crazy. We are concierging our kids every minute of existence, overhelping. It ends up leaving them unprepared, you know, to do the actual work of living life, paying bills, earning a living, being able to take the initiative and have a work ethic in the workplace. You know, we're depriving them of that.
So what's your recommendation for how we raise kids to be able to do those things then?
Well, your listeners right now can stop doing these three things if they're doing them. Number one, stop saying we if you mean your son or daughter. We're not on the soccer team. We're not doing the science project. And we're not applying to college. It's their work. It's their achievement and so on. Number two, stop arguing with all the adults in their lives, teachers, coaches, principals. These folks, for the most part, are adults who are authority figures who deserve our respect. And we need to show our kids that they're deserving of respect. And in those moments when we do need to have a tough conversation with that person, we need to teach our kids how to have that conversation on their own behalf. Number three, finally, stop doing their homework. I don't care of how much you think you understand algebra better than your kid. Of course you do. You've had algebra. It's their turn. The only way they learn is to do the work themselves. You don't want to be that parent that writes their kid's college app or that parent that helps their kid with their work at college or in the workplace. Yes, it happens. You can stop.
Julie Lithcott-Hames is author of the newly released How to Raise an Adult. She spoke with us from Stanford University. Wow, what an inspiration and pleasure to speak with you. I'll do my best, but thanks so much for joining us, Julie.
Magna, thanks so much for having me on Here and Now. I really appreciate it.
So moms and dads, what's your response? Are you ruining your children? Are you ruining America? Let us know at hereandnow.org.